Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
This is Dina Wilder, the behind-the-scenes editor, and I'm going to just explain a little bit about what's going to be happening. Today, we are going to share part three of 2021 Build a Movement, which occurred on November 12th. In this episode of Build a Movement, or affectionately known as BAM, Alan Hines and Nico Serra are the facilitators. Alan Hines is the Housing Access Director of Community Vision and the Director of Real Choice Initiative, and Nico Serra is a very active disability activist. So in Build a Movement 1 and 2, there was lots of discussion about what cross-disability movement is. In Build a Movement 3, we invited legislators to come and listen to our voices. Last month, we shared with you some of those voices. And this month, we are going to do a continuation, listening to more voices. First, we will hear from John Merrick.
For now, I would like to communicate its land and house taxes. And what I mean about that is and how it affects people with disabilities. What I mean about that is taxes around your district are about $5,500 a year, for example. That's about $500 a month. And that is doable for some on fixed income, some with disabilities on fixed income. I would like to find a way to how to get people with disabilities in a way that I do not have to put in a third-party trust or in my name, and the house is being taken away from me in a way that because they pay for my taxes and my insurance. Another thing is, I've discussed it with your office, is that when you guys raise certain wages, we are on a fixed income of $1,200, and it can only raise up to $2,000. So when you raise minimum wage, but the thing is, someone like myself who is trying to get out of disabilities or whatnot, that is, it's very hard to communicate in ways that when minimum wage becomes as a whole, but for those with disabilities, it's not being thought about your policy making. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I'm going to read Gabrielle Goudon's testimony, if that's okay. Gabrielle says, I find that as a person with a disability, before I got help from my mom, I had getting a place to live, getting supports to get a house. When I would go to look for an apartment, it was not safe or in a clean area to keep me healthy. My mom stepped in to get me help. I find all my friends struggling to find a safe place to live. It's hard to get providers to get me to medical appointments. I had gone 7 to 8 months without a provider and had 3 fractures and 3 medical crises during that time. It's been really hard. I had to drive with a fractured wrist. You can heal easier with support. We have to scrap to find a provider that you can trust in your personal space. I had 2 bad experiences with providers. One was crying on her shift and discussing things about her personal life. She ate my food. She said something racist and would not get vaccinated. The next one talked about her own self almost 8 hours. To be able to find a quality provider is difficult. The quality ones are not given the right payment. If you do not pay someone quality pay, benefits, and show enough respect, people will leave their jobs. So that was Gabrielle's testimony, which I think exemplifies a lot of people's feelings about having quality care means that we need to have quality pay, to have quality people, to support them to live in a place that feels safe too. Like finding affordable housing is also difficult. You end up sometimes, if you're on low income, to have to live in a place that doesn't feel safe. Do you have any questions for any of us?
No, I don't think so at this time. And I know, you all have done a really good job of telling your stories and the things we need to do. And I know we've worked with some folks in the past to help, John, to your point about the way the pay works and how that works. And we're trying to find a way to help make it better. It's not a good system. And you all aren't being treated fairly in the system. So we definitely, want to try to look at if there's another bill that comes up this session, want to try to help out with that, because that's really important let you all feel respected, and there's a lot of times the system doesn't do that.
I had a question for the representative, if he doesn't mind. My question is, so what bill are we talking about?
You're wondering what bill he has in mind that might be helpful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know anywhere. We're coming up on a session here. It'll start in February. And a lot of the legislators will start introducing their bills in January. So we don't know what's coming yet. The one I talked about was one we had tried to do in 2019. Mm-hmm. And I think it passed and it helped change maximum amount of hours that folks could work, which mm-hmm. I think helped because there's a lot of folks who were limited in the number of hours they could even were allowed to work. So that was one mm-hmm. we had worked on. And hopefully there'll be more coming forward this session that we can support.
So Ryan, when a bill gets tabled, for example, for like that, what type of local support or other representative support do you need from a self-advocacy in a way that tables always get built, you know, shoved or, you know, on the table, but in particular those ones that you expected on what needs to be done in a way of your difficulties of your offices?
Yeah. That's a great question. So I think the best thing to do, so maybe there's a really big concept that just, you know, maybe needs some work and some conversations. So there's something called a work group that folks can do. And I think that's usually the best option. That's something that, so all of there's the policy committees in the legislature. So like environmental healthcare. So it starts by usually introducing a bill. You'll know if it's got a good chance of passing or not. If it doesn't, you could always ask if maybe they could do a work group. And that's an opportunity for folks to have a little bit more conversations over a year or maybe 2 years, talk about maybe the best way of taking care of a problem, and then coming back with a lot of support and a really good concrete idea. And that's a really good way of passing something that might be too hard to pass right off the bat. So did that answer your question?
Absolutely. If you can help us connect those work groups.
Right.
Yeah. So I just wanted to bring forth an experience that an advocate who couldn't be here today, it was a struggle to find him housing. And a little bit about this self-advocate is they were living independently and then developed diabetes and it became medically unstable. And instead of the doctors working with him to find caregivers to provide those supports in home, they suggested that he go into a group home, even though that's not what he wanted. About 8 years before he came to an advocacy event, and the day that I met him just cried because he realized that people had what he'd always wanted, but was told that he couldn't ever access it because of his disability. And now lives in his own apartment, but it's not a good area. It's a single room with his own bathroom, but you have a shared kitchen. He doesn't even feel safe in his own complex. And he's been struggling for the last year to find affordable housing and accessible housing. Like Ken can't even find really a roommate that's safe to live with. But I just really want to be mindful of the fact, like when we're talking about affordable and accessible housing, if people cannot find that, the only option is either group homes or being houseless. And I will say a lot of the individuals that I meet when I do outreach who are houseless, about 80% of them have disabilities and are on SSI, but cannot find housing. And we need affordable and accessible housing within local areas, not rural areas, because the further you push us out because of our disability, we lose services. We lose access to the programs that could be beneficial. We don't have access to support providers because the drive is too long or it's not worth taking that much transportation. And then to echo another advocate's who couldn't be here today, we don't just want apartments. Stop putting us in single occupant apartments. We want houses. We want to have families. We want to thrive in a bigger space. And some people can't live with roommates. Some people can, and there needs to be not just affordable, accessible units. There needs to be diversity in the options that fit people's needs. And it is becoming a crisis. I know so many people who just to maintain their services have been going into group homes. And once you go into a group home, you do not have access to brokerage services. It's a very different county case management support system. They do not get the same community access that a lot of people do. It's very isolating within their own home. And it's extremely difficult to get back out of case management or out of group homes. So yeah, it's very layered and has many impacts. And at the end of the day, it all equals people not being able to thrive within their life or being dangerously close to being houseless or houseless. So I just wanted to echo that.
I just wanted to lift up for the Oregon legislature that I think really an incredible legislative priority for the state of Oregon would be universal housing, and that would save the state's general fund a tremendous amount of money to invest in everyone who's a resident of the state of Oregon having adequate housing, and that the savings in emergency room visits and interactions with law enforcement and myriad other ways that folks end up interacting with the state is vastly more expensive than just housing everyone. And there have been programs, I believe, in the statewide in Utah, but I think there's been moves to roll that out statewide in Utah, other places in the United States. I think that would be an amazing legislative priority for the state of Oregon that would make a tremendous amount of difference to all sorts of people's lives.
Thank you, Santi.
Hello, you are listening to KBOO Disability Justice Program. And right now we are specifically listening to Build a Movement, which occurred in the fall in 2021. And we are listening to the testimonies folks gave to some local legislators. So continue listening in.
Does SSI welcome to that too by any chance?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to talk about SSI?
Because I am having a major problem that is going to involve with a lawyer and a benefit counselor, because apparently it is that bad right now. Actually.
Yeah.
It's kind of going down the drain, mm-hmm. so to speak of.
Can you say more about what's happening, Rachel, if you feel comfortable?
This is going to sound very crazy, but ever since I have my new job, it has been going up and down kind of. At first it goes higher, then it goes lower. It's just the problem is this part. They can't meet in the middle.
Yeah.
It just kind of goes.
Yeah.
Like I have to pay this much money to the SSI. And that's just saying that if I go any higher than that, I will be off.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah.
I can't pay that much money. It's going to make me broke.
Thank you for sharing, Rachel, and for being vulnerable and sharing your story. So Alan said, and I'm going to say with him, that it sounds like you're talking about the income limits. And for those who don't know, once you win your Social Security case, you are told that you have to stay under a certain amount of money every month. So people will say, like, I want to work.
Exactly my point.
Yeah. And so I always explain it to people as like, either we're like falling through the safety net holes, or we're like caught like in a spider web. And it's kind of like one or the other. Social Security actually has a setup so that people can make I think it's like at least $30,000 before they start getting into any of this. But it's almost no one in the disability community knows about this status. And I had to get Ron Wyden's office involved to get it set up for myself, which was just like, wait, why can't my caseworker just do it? Oh, you can't do it. You can't do it. I had to go to my senator to get it done, and the ombudsman with the Oregon Health Authority. So I think we're at time here. Thank you, representatives, for hearing us out on some of these things. I know we're dropping a lot of truth bombs with a lot of intense stories. So thank you for hanging in there with us.
No, I just appreciate hearing the stories.
Yeah, I just appreciate hearing them.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think I'd echo that and just say that I'm always blown away by the sheer complexity and just the... Because I know that people with lots of good intentions have worked on these policies, but always hearing about how much we're still really failing to serve people is always just, it's really hard and we need to do better.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here to witness what's happening and maybe we can figure out some. I know it feels like we're just kind of dropping all of it today and hopefully there are ways we can work together in the future to make these things change faster. So thank you. Santi, do you want to go first and share any stories about housing, healthcare, or services?
I was mentioning to Representative Nose that one thing I think would be really helpful is if our elected folks, you know, hopefully both on the legislative and executive side at the state level, and also at the national level, but that's not today's conversation. If our elected representatives, you know, who are there to represent the people, if they could be leaders in the public conversation of the fact that our system is in crisis, that our workforce is in crisis, you know, especially the thinness of the workforce and basically the disrespect that people who do support work aren't treated as skilled workers, aren't treated as professionals. And I think that's the same. I think it's the same situation with farm workers. I think that pretty much all farm work, whether it's with apples or with tomatoes, is pretty highly skilled. And that's referred to as unskilled work. And there's a lot of prejudice. Other folks will talk about how support work is traditionally gendered as women's work. And so there's an aspect of sexism that comes into the way that it doesn't seem like the public economy, this being a publicly funded system, values the work of folk who are doing support work. So just to circle back, as I was saying to Representative Nose, one thing that I think would be really helpful is just folks who are in elected positions leading the public conversation, referring to this as a crisis, because I feel like for the majority of the electorate, the people who are in the system are invisible, that most voters aren't aware that this system exists.
Yeah. And Santi, thank you so much for sharing. That was wonderful. DJ Lamar is great at doing recordings and stuff. What do you have to share for us with us today, Lamar?
Well, I didn't just let you all know that I had a lot to say today. People are living on SSI. That's all. There is no other income coming in at this time. So we all have to survive. Like myself, I have to survive because the only income that I'm getting now is SSI. So yeah, it's not enough. There's stuff that you cannot afford that people need.
Yeah.
So what can we do? What else can we do?
Well, I think that you bring up a lot of really important points, and thank you for sharing. I would say we, as people with disabilities, are doing what we need to do, right? We're surviving, and we are getting together in a group and figuring out how the heck do we get our stories across to the people who vote on this stuff, right? They're the ones that are sitting in the Senate and the House, and they say, yeah, I think this healthcare stuff should be paid for. And no, I don't want to pay for that. You know, our job is to survive and maybe even thrive as people with disabilities, and to communicate with the people in power. You know, John Griffiths, our founder, was talking about maybe we need to think outside the box. Are there other people in power that we could also be talking to? And I think that's something that I'm excited to explore with this group too. And Ellen said, and I think this is a really great idea, for the legislators and the representatives from the legislative offices that are still here, if you could take like maybe about a minute or so just to reflect what you heard today from people in our groups. Okay.
I was going to say, I'll start because I'm not on mute.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Hey, so it's Barbara Smith Warner. There's always so many things that we're working on. And even in this last session, when we know that we had significant increases in a lot of funding for a lot of services for the DD community, there is still so much further to go. And just that reminder is so it's really helpful and important for me. I was telling in one of my groups, I said, I have been on this kick lately of, you know, there's so much money in the world, and we make people go through so many hoops in order to access both resources and services. Just, it makes more, while super rich people literally build rockets to send into space for no reason, the more I think about it, the more, why can't we have universal income? Why can't we have universal healthcare? It just, it's so much more logical, and it would deal with so many, it would do such a significant shift in how the world functions that it could really change how we all, you know, how we all survive or what we have to struggle with and how. So sorry, that's a little, I went a little kind of 30,000 feet level. But I would just, I just say thank you for the reminders. Thank you for engaging, because you talking to us in person is the most important and useful thing that you can do, is to tell us your stories, that every time we're having budget conversations or bills, we literally remember talking to you here, talking to you at that church basement, you know, 2 years ago. This is a great way to engage with us. Really useful for us and really effective for you. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Smith-Warner. Thank you. It would be awesome to hear a couple more of our legislative representatives and their assistance and stuff. Does anyone else want to share?
I think just understanding how much need there is and how critical it is to fund these services and to pay the workers the living wage was all super important. I think one of the biggest things that stuck with me is something John said, which is how much this has to be led by those who experience the system and who understand how it works by those like critical lived experiences. And I just thought that was super important, and I really appreciated it taking the time to say that.
Yes, thank you, Emerson. I think I'm probably just going to echo a little bit of what Representative Smith-Warner and Emerson said, that the two things that I heard most prominently were paying our workforce a living wage. And we had a little bit of a conversation with John about, you know, wages for the workforce, and then a little bit about housing. I talked with Jenny and then Santiago about accessible housing and innovative solutions so that folks can really have their own place to live. Ruth mentioned that as well. So thank you all.
Yeah, I just really wanted to say thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome, Zoe. Thank you so much. And
thanks for hearing our amazing stories.
So we're going to have another session for BAM, hopefully in the spring. The legislators have a very short session this year, and they might be done in February. And we still might invite them, and we might, like John Griffiths, our founder, was saying, maybe we're going to start thinking outside of the box. And who are the other power players in the world besides our legislators that we can start talking to? You know, I love what you said, Representative Barbara Smith-Warner, about, you know what, we got people going on joyrides to space while the rest of us are down here scrapping to survive. And we're, as a group of people with disabilities, we're done scrapping. We're ready to come and get our full cake and our full pizza and our full piece of the pie and all of it. And so this is, you know, hopefully the beginning of a much bigger movement. And next time we get together, hopefully there'll be more and more people with disabilities from all of our worlds. I'm going to give John Griffiths the first chance to speak here, the person who founded BAM 5 years ago.
Once again, I'd really like to thank the representatives for coming, the representative staff members as well as for coming. Help bring our message to the legislation that governs our lives. And it's really important to all of the participants here to see you take an interest in our lives. And you know, we just want to say we appreciate that on all of our behalfs.
So Alan said that in the spring, he's really hoping that we're going to be able to dig into more of organizing concepts and strategies and start talking about, like, all right, like, what are we going to do and how? What are the exact things that we're going to do and where and what and all of those things? And who do we do that stuff with? So we're going to start getting really strategic. We're going to get our chess boards out. Yeah, so Alan said that his intention with what we were doing in this session of BAM was to show the impacts of our individual stories and how they build a collective bigger story.
So the more stories for the
He said that the more people that we gather, the more stories that we gather, the more people that say they are committed to this work and this movement with us, the stronger we'll be. And that, you know, as members of humanity, we all deserve certain things and we're coming for our stuff.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.
Also, we're always looking for fun, inexpensive things to do out in the community. Go to disabilityjustice@kboo.org to contact us and give us your ideas.